Good afternoon. It is December the 30th, 2018. Tomorrow is New Year's Eve. The end of 2018, the beginning of 2019, and depending upon how you looked at 2018, one can hope either 2019 is better or worse, right? As it stands right now, you have a strange confusion amongst the economic prognosticators concerning the state of the U.S. economy, the world economy, and if you believe what you read, and frankly, you shouldn't believe most of it is probably bullshit, we might have a recession soon, maybe we'll have a recession. These are the same people that told you that the U.S. economy recovered in 2010, which was funny, because a lot of people, a lot of strippers, a lot of hookers, who you can see mother and daughter couples on Aurora Avenue between 65th Street and 120th, between June and August of any given year since then, would probably disagree with. But yeah, it's almost a new year, and this is the Little Saigon report, because I'm still in Little Saigon for at least another month. After that, I will be somewhere in the Casbah, likely homeless, likely down to what fits into a duffel bag, and as okay with that as I can be, because frankly, you know, come on. Anyways, I wasn't sure what the topic of today's podcast would be, but before I go too far, I would like to read a little from the Bible. Now, I know that's a little bit crazy in this internet world to read from the Bible. No, that's forbidden, verboten, and that German lingo. But I'm going to read from 1 Samuel, chapter 8, and I will start with verse 10. And the title of 1 Samuel, chapter 8, verse 10 is Samuel's Warning Against Kings. Now, as preface before I read this, Samuel, well, first, before I go too far, I am by no means a Bible expert, Bible guru. I am a relatively newly born Christian in the sense that before 2012, I wouldn't have called myself a Christian. At times, I might have called myself a deist, but in retrospect, and thinking about what deism actually is, no, I'm not a deist. I'm an actual Christian, but I am not a Bible expert, so any information I give concerning the Bible should be reviewed with whichever minister or person you trust, preferably yourself, because, you know, your relationship with God is between yourself and God. So this is from 1 Samuel chapter 8, starting with verse 10. So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking for a king from him. He said, "These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen and to run before his chariots. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and some to plow his ground and to reap his harvest, and to make his implements of war and the equipment of his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his servants. He will take the tenth of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and to his servants. He will take your male servants and female servants and the best of your young men and your donkeys and put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your flocks, and you shall be his slaves. And in that day you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, but the Lord will not answer you in that day." Now that is, again, the book of Samuel, the first book of Samuel, chapter 8, verse 10 through 18. Now, before I go too far, Samuel was a prophet. Samuel was the first prophet after the Exodus, after the Hebrews left left the slavery of the Pharaoh in Egypt. He was the first prophet to come along and actually, well, open the idea of having a king. But as you can tell, and I think if you read Samuel, and if you read between the lines, so to speak, if you practice discernment and a little bit of hermeneutics, you can tell in the words of Samuel that he's not really fond of this idea of having a king. Prior to Samuel, the free Israel, Israel that had left slavery, was ruled over by judges. Now, so you know, as you know, you probably know by now, I'm an anarchist, so I'm not a big fan of judges or kings or senators or most or much of what we call democracy because it's such a fucking lie. But what I will say is this, is that if you review the Bible, and especially the Old Testament, you'll find one of many common themes. I'm not saying there's one theme. Actually, as I read the Bible, as I reread it, as I allow myself to dig deeper into its words, I really find the Old Testament to be even more cogent in some ways than the New Testament. I'm not saying that the New Testament is not important. The New Covenant is critical. But the Old Testament is more or less the foundation, the rock. It is the wellspring of knowledge. And if you can see it for what it is, you'll see many, what I would call, many forms of wisdom. One of the recurrent themes, and I would call it one of the forms of wisdom you can glean from the Old Testament, is this recurrent theme of God giving human beings great gifts, great abilities, great resources, and above all else, free will. And you can imagine God in heaven shaking his head every single time Israel, being Jacob, but Jacob's children, being given all these gifts, all of these things, and free will, and then after so many decades or centuries, finding someone to rule over them, or just as bad, finding another god. Now, I'd like to say that this has some endpoint, that the Sisyphean journey has a conclusion, and in a way it does. That's kind of the beginning of the New Testament. But for the most part, the Old Testament is a story of the Jewish people being given authority, sovereignty over their own lives, not as a group, but as individuals given authority, given sovereignty over their own lives, and then more or less looking for the nearest person to basically be their slave master. Now, I thought about this today because I was reading the Bible. It's Sunday. I don't think you should only read the Bible on Sunday. I think you should probably read it if you're a Christian as often as you can. But I was thinking today, because I was reading an article, I was reading several articles, and I can't say there was a common theme. I mean, there was an article on Zero Hedge about Chuck Todd proclaiming to the world that no one who denies climate change can be allowed on, that the science is settled, and boy, do I not want to get into the intellectual slavery of that. Anyone who understands science, especially the natural sciences, any actual scientist, probably cornered in a bar because nobody wants to lose their job these days, would tell you that one of the maybe features of science is that proper science is always off balance, which means that it's never settled, you know, in the sense of settling. You know how sediment, if I pour a bunch of sediment into a glass of water and mix it up, yes, 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 you know, it'll be cloudy for a few minutes, maybe even an hour or so, but eventually the sediment will settle in the bottom. Science doesn't work that way. Science is constantly a process of things being unsettled, of things being mixed up. Thomas Kuhn, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. I don't agree with everything he said in that book, but I will tell you this. If you want to understand the true nature of science, you should read Thomas Kuhn. Don't listen to fucking Chuck Todd. So yeah, there was Chuck Todd's little thing about science being a religion, which maybe it is. I mean, I do know that science, if corrupted, does become religious in nature. So I think he was talking of science as religion, not science as exploration. And then there was another article on Zero Hedge about the New York Police Department using drone technology, and probably, it's probably worse than this, because like all the propaganda these days, if you're lucky, you'll see a little bit of the tip of the iceberg, but you don't really see much more. Yeah, they were talking about how the New York Police Department plans on using drones and also anti-drone technology. So only the righteous drones, the drones of the state, can fly in the sky in New York City on New Year's Eve. And the evil drones, the drones of individuals, should stay grounded. I don't own a drone, so I couldn't give a fuck. How this relates to this passage from Samuel is as follows. And I think it should be clear at this point in the podcast. The United States of America was not founded by perfect people. In fact, it might have been. Again, I have allowed myself to entertain some very dangerous thoughts in recent years. One of which is our entire history of the American Revolution might be a big snow job. It might be completely misleading. We might know very little of the real truth. It might be the case that the closest this country ever actually came to true freedom, the closest we ever got, was during the period of the Articles of Confederation, that more or less ended by the 17, you know, obviously when we adopt the Constitution, so by 1789. So for a few years, a brief period of time, really only half a decade, America might have been a free country. We might have been. It's entirely plausible that we were a free country. But no one could actually allow this. You know, a free country isn't a free nation isn't very likely to, you know, give up resources to build giant armies. In fact, the American people had just got done fighting a revolution over the fact that the British government wanted to remove, extract resources to fund the empire, to fund the British military. So, you know, of the many things I'd say about a truly free people, a truly free people is not likely to support the construction of a massive military. Well, if you want to be an empire, a la Alexander Hamilton and his bullshit, if you want to have a nation that looks basically like a slave plantation, again, Hamilton's vision, you have to have a standing army. You have to have a professional standing army. Sure, at first it'll be small, maybe even pathetic, but it just takes time, like weeds. So you couldn't really have a free people. One of the first things that had to go away once the revolution was achieved was any notion of actual freedom. Now, of course, like I said, it would be really about 150 years almost, but at least more than a century, before the total enslavement was achieved. It would be about a century, you know, when the nails in the coffin would be hit. But for the first 100 years of our country's history, it wasn't a lack of desire on the part of Washington, D.C. to have imperial rule. It was a lack of resources. And like most forms of evil, like most kinds of infections, essentially like the destruction of anything, it starts with cracks. It starts with a creeping process of disorder that you can barely notice. It might be mildew. It might be something that looks torn or brownish. It might just be a stain. It starts small. But eventually, and if you're patient, and the one thing I'll say about evil and the ultimate form of evil, which is Satan, there's a lot of patience there. If you actually see true evil for what it is an incredibly patient process. It is the cartoon version, the propaganda version of the devil and of evil that makes it seem like a teenage boy whacking off to a girly magazine. But in fact, true evil plans over hundreds of years, thousands of years. True evil starts its plans almost from the beginning and has a plan from the beginning. So here's Samuel, okay? Arguably sometime in the, you know, 1100s or 1200s BC, plus or minus. Again, it's not my area of expertise. I'm not entirely sure if the first kings of Israel, in terms of their timeline, has ever been conclusively figured out, but I think you could say somewhere between 1500 BC and 1000 BC. Here's Samuel basically describing to the people of Israel, here's what's going to happen. If you have a king, this king is going to take your daughters. If you have a king, this king is going to take your wealth. If you have a king, eventually, eventually this king is going to enslave you. And even being told this, even with the memory, as foggy as that memory might be, even with the memory of enslavement in Egypt, the people of Israel demanded a king. And so Samuel goes to God and says, listen, they want a king. And the statement from God, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm going to paraphrase this. The statement from God is like, go ahead, let him have it. That's not exactly what he says, but it's kind of basically the gist of it. And I can kind of, and I can imagine God in heaven shaking his head, saying, not again. I mean, of every opportunity these people are given to take control of their own lives, and only being asked to worship me, you know, in heaven, which again is the nature of religion, right? But it's a one-to-one relationship, and God is judge. Every opportunity, and the Israelites choose slavery again. And if you've read the first few books of the Old Testament, specifically those that have to do with the years of wandering, the years following the Exodus, you also see the microcosm of this theme. You see these persistently rebellious Jewish people, but not rebellious for their own sovereignty, rebellious to go back to some type of control and enslavement. To go back to the comfort and the warmth and the predictable meal schedule and the lack of concerns. You know, you don't have to be worried about anything if you're a slave. They want to go back to the Pharaoh. This is also the story of America today. America wants the Pharaoh. You might believe in freedom. You might not be an anarchist like me, you know. You might actually be a libertarian, which is pretty close, but you might be a libertarian and you might say to yourself, well, Dan, I'm a Christian and I believe in God, obviously, and I believe in freedom, but I hate to break it to you, you're probably in a minority. Most of the people I meet these days, in fact, most of the people in my own family, even though they know what the right answer is, are too afraid to choose it. Why? Well, the first reason is, probably, most of the political class is made up of families, people with kids, and kids are used as a weapon. The first thing that someone says is, well, listen, if you don't have a powerful government, how will your kids get health care? They're going to need health care, right? You got to have that. If you don't have a extremely powerful government, where are the roads going to come from? No one's going to build roads or bridges. Now, please, as an aside, let's ignore for a second that all the roads and bridges are crumbling in this country right now. But all we need are more taxes, right? If you don't have a powerful government, they'll say, Dan, we won't be able to defend ourselves against enemies. The United States of America spends about 750 billion dollars a year on weapons. We spend more than, I think it's the top 10 or top 20 countries combined on weapons, on tools of destruction, on tools of war. So what do I read as one of these recurrent articles of late? Well, Putin, evil Putin, Russia, he's deploying hypersonic missiles next year. And what boggles the mind is, why aren't Americans outraged in the sense of, okay, so we spent all this money on all this truly fascist, truly bullshit police state crap, on all this monitoring, not just Americans, but the whole fucking world. We spend more money on weapons than all these other countries combined, but now we're scared because we're behind in the hypersonic weapon race. And oh, for great sadness for America that they don't have the hypersonic weapons. What a tragedy, right? And I say that in sarcastic terms, like, quote-unquote tragedy. It's not tragedy. Tragedies are not that predictable, okay? They really aren't. Tragedies usually have a twist. This is not a tragedy. It might be a horrible comedy, but the fact is that you have a government telling you that they extract massive resources from you, the slave, but all of a sudden they now know that their enemies have super weapons. That, oh, well, gee, don't ask the question why you don't have super weapons. Don't ask that horrible question. Don't ask why, for spending almost $1 trillion a year, you don't have the super hypersonic missiles. You're not supposed to ask that fucking question. You're supposed to feel sorry for the Department of Defense. And along these lines is this recent announced troop withdrawal, the withdrawal of forces from Syria. Okay, I don't really believe it yet. I think it's another one of these rope-a-dopes, and boy, doesn't the American propaganda machine love rope-a-dopes. They love it. They love sucker punches. But assuming that Trump is for real, assuming he's actually trying to turn off or at least turn down the military-industrial complex, well, okay, but what are all the quote-unquote voices of reason in America saying, oh, Trump's being terrible, and he's abandoning our allies? Fuck, I read a quote from Mattis, a fucking quote from General Mattis, and I'm paraphrasing again, where he basically says that from his perspective, the strength of America is in all of these alliances and all these treaties. Really? Really, General Mattis? When I swore the oath in 1996, I was told the strength of America was in its freedom, its liberty. So I don't know what the fuck America Mattis envisions, but the reality is the America Mattis imagines is the America we have. That is where we live. We live in a nation of slaves. We live in a nation that is really an empire. We live to rule the world, and when we can no longer rule the world, we're crazy. We don't understand. It's like, what the hell? You're saying that the world doesn't want to do what we tell it to do? Are you saying that people want to exercise free will? That's fucking insane. I as I said at the beginning of this podcast, I am not a Bible scholar, but as I read the Bible, as I come to understand it, as I recall what I... Well, as I recall what I remember as a kid going to church, and keep in mind, I was raised Catholic, so I don't know that I was raised actually as a Christian, but as I recall what I was told in church, there is this common theme. There is this question of who you obey. In the end, unless you can prove that some particular temporal leader, that some particular person on earth, that some particular person on earth is actually a representative of God, unless you can prove that, and for me, it would take a tremendous proof, and I don't know if I'd believe it, it's hard for me to listen. In fact, the only person I expect to come along and claim some sort of religious approval will be you-know-who, you know, basically the devil, basically the Antichrist as his or her representative on earth. But yeah... You know, other than that or angels, you know, but again, it's sort of told to us this way that our slavery is justified. Well, I will say this, and I'll close the podcast with this because I think this is essentially true. Our slavery is justified, okay? It really is. It is justified in the absolute biblical sense. It is as justified as the Lord in heaven washing away the Nephilim and the fallen angels with the flood. It is that real. It is that justified. We are slaves not because some army invaded the United States of America. We are slaves because we chose to go back into captivity. We had a brief respite. We had a short period of time where we had some level of human dignity, some level of liberty. Maybe it was 100 years. Maybe it was less. We had that period of time and it's gone. Whatever the reasons for it, my argument would be the main reason for 100 years of liberty had more to do with the frontier than it had to do with our government. Our government didn't want us to be free, no more than it concerned itself with essentially signing away the liberty of African Americans for another 100 years if that had stopped the Civil War. A lot of Americans don't realize that Lincoln would have been willing to do that. In 1861 or 62, Lincoln would have signed away every African American's life for all time as long as it would have ended the war. Sure, you know, there would have been limits on slavery in new states, but really, any amount of slavery is kind of, well, it's pretty much evil. And so the reality of the storyline is we chose slavery. We are slaves by choice. I even have to include myself because at this point in my life, I made enough of the wrong choices when I was younger, like serving in the military, like paying my taxes, like actually believing that there was anything called limited government. Limited government is an impossibility. It is precisely like a heroin addict basically trying to practice, you know, self-control. Maybe once in a while it works, maybe. But for the most part, there's no such thing. It never happens. It cannot happen. And when it does happen, all the forces of the world will come along to destroy it. The only choice you have is to be free or to not be free. The only choice you have is to be a willing slave or a slave in rebellion. Now, me, I'm basically a slave in rebellion. Do I have weapons I use? No. Do I have comrades or underground forces or anything like that? No. I am 100% alone. It doesn't bother me because I know in one sense I'm not alone. I know there are lots of people out there just like me. But I am alone in the sense that the entire artifice of modern life is set up to keep us separated in a meaningful sense. I don't mean social media bullshit. I don't mean WhatsApp. I mean meaningful connections between people that involve things like, I don't know, shaking hands and saying hello. America is a slave plantation because Americans want to be there. Now, does that mean we'll be okay because we all want to be slaves and plug ourselves into the bullshit consumer model of crapola? Not really. Slave systems don't actually ever succeed. It's one of the reasons why the slave state is looking towards technology. I mean, if you can't make a slave state succeed, then what do? You get rid of most, if not all, the slaves. But that's not something that slaves get told about. That's basically something that the slave masters talk about. Not our business. Kind of like Chuck Todd saying, you know, the science of climate change is settled. There are no new opinions. The science is over. There's a book called The Science of Climate. It's now closed and sealed in wax with a giant lock on it. The same thing applies to the situation with human beings here in America. We're slaves. We were given, I shouldn't say given, we wrestled our sovereignty for a brief time from one government, and that's the British government. We wrestled it away. We wrested it from their fucking hands. And so for a very brief time, once again, because I think this has happened a few times in human history, there was a people that was free. It was extremely brief, and it was not perfect. Probably the closest we came to Eden was those 4 or 5 or 6 years between the end of the revolution and the beginning of the Constitution. But we were once free. I will never, I don't think I'll live to see freedom in this country again, not barring some massive collapse of centralized authority. And I don't see that happening, or at least not in a way that doesn't involve massive destruction, which would be horrible. So I'll basically die a rebellious slave, a slave that suffers from drapetomania. But at least I'll have my Bible and my faith. And if I can keep the faith, if I can walk the path in a wretched world, in a fallen world, and definitely a fallen America, I will continue to do so. But I won't pretend that any of this is okay, and I will not pretend that any of this is moral. We live in a fallen country, mostly populated by people who are either evil or willing to obey evil for reasons of comfort. We live in a nation of moms and dads who are constantly threatened that their children will be taken away unless they obey. So, yeah, I don't know what 2019 looks like, but I would not expect it to be any better than 2018 was. See ya.